And they haven't eaten any of you? Neve asked. A few have tried, but the cold and the thinner air makes them less active, Sanders said. They've mostly just been clinging to Bella for warmth. Which makes your threat of feeding us to them less terrifying. Well, we'll deliver you to them directly. That'll help. Sanders checked his watch again. And soon, because it's only going to be a couple of hours before Bella goes up, by our estimation. The Canadians have to know you're here by now, Kaharangi said. Of course they do. They gave us permits, Sanders said. They think we're doing radio interferometry out here. We told them a week ago that tonight they might see some intense light coming from here as part of our work, so they're expecting that. And the massive fucking kaiju? Neve asked. We have permission to build structures as long as we don't permanently alter the site. Bella is a structure, as far as they know. No one's going to buy that, Aparna said. They might not if we were doing this in the middle of Montreal, but we're 60 miles from the nearest town of any size, in Labrador, in the middle of a pandemic. We're not even on any flight paths. I don't think you understand how incredibly perfect this location is for this. You are planning to permanently alter the site, though, I said. A nuclear explosion will do that. Well, that's true, Sanders conceded. But they'll think we went up with it. But in fact, a cargo-sized copter is coming to take away our lab container, and me, and my crew. It'll be here presently. You folks came just as we were wrapping things up. Sanders slapped his thighs and stood up. So, let's go ahead and put a pin in things, shall we? You don't want to ask us any more questions, I asked. Not really, no, Sanders said. I thought I did, but I know how you came through. I know no one knows you're here, and I know no one knows I or my family's company is behind this. You're all going to die and be vaporized. What else do I need to know? We have more questions, Aparna said. I'm sure you do, but that's not actually how this works. But I hope you enjoyed the monologuing. We did, Kaharangi said. And so will KPS headquarters. Sanders paused. Come again? Kaharangi nodded to the remote control-looking thing on the ground. That's been recording the whole time, and sending everything you've said to a device I hit on Bella. It's being stored there for right now. It's on a dead man switch. If I don't press that button, he pointed to a red button on the remote, at least once an hour, it sends everything. That's a cute threat in an area where there's no cell phone coverage, Sanders said. You have a Wi-Fi network up, I pointed out. It's local, he said. And how do you know that? Because I used Dave's phone to download your shared files and uploaded them to the same device. Which has no connection, Sanders reminded us. You're bluffing. Oh, for Christ's sake, Neve said. They're called satellites, you asshole. Your pal Elon just put a few thousand of them up. We're not friends, Sanders said, sounding defensive. Actually, this one works with the Iridium satellites, Kaharangi said. They're old and slow, but they're reliable. And they'll receive everything in... He checked his watch. 5 minutes. Sanders reached down and picked up the remote. This button? He asked, pointing to the red disc on the remote. He pressed it. Bad monologuing, he said to Kaharangi. You only reveal your secret after it's too late. Kaharangi smiled. You don't think that works without my fingerprint, do you? Sanders frowned and looked at the remote. What? I mean, that's just basic security right there, Kaharangi said. Sanders presented Kaharangi with the remote. Press it, he said. Or what? Neve said. You're going to kill him? Mate, you've already played that card. Sanders looked to Neve. How about I have you shot in the gut so he can hear you scream in agony until he presses the button? Wow. That's dark, Neve said. Also, fuck you. Have it your way. Sanders looked up at his lead minion. Would you please? Hey, Kaharangi said. No gut shooting anyone. Give me the remote. He held out his hand. Sanders put the remote into it. Kaharangi looked at all of us. So I guess this is it, he said. I guess it is, I replied. I just want to say that no matter what happens, I'm glad I met each of you, Kaharangi said. He looked up at Sanders. Not you, he clarified. You can die in a fire. But you, Jamie, you, Aparna, you, Neve. I'm glad for our friendship. I'm glad for yours, Aparna said. Me too, I concurred. I didn't plan to go out with this much mush, Neve said. But yeah, you're all the best. They looked up at Sanders. Again, not you. You are the worst. Just the worst, Aparna agreed. History's worst monster, I said. I can still have you shot in the gut, Sanders said. Like, all of you. Oh, right, Kahurangi said. He pressed the button and then tossed the remote back to Sanders. By the way, I lied. You what? He lied, I said. So did I. We all lied, Aparna said. Not about liking each other, Neve said to Sanders. We do. And not about you being an asshole. You are. I lied about what that remote control does, Kahurangi said. One, it doesn't record anything. It's just a remote control. Two, it doesn't control a box that sends data to a satellite, Aparna said. No, I lied about that too, Kahurangi agreed. Three, it's not a dead man switch, I said. When you pressed the button, you activated it. Activated what? Sanders said. From the direction of Bella, came yells and screams. You said that the parasites are sluggish here and are clinging to Bella, Kahurangi said. I planted a pheromone bomb that should wake them right up. Around us, the lightest scent of oranges and citrus cut through the smells of pine and dirt. What do you mean you woke them up? Sanders asked. I told you once that pheromones aren't a perfect language, Kahurangi said. And that's true. This pheromone, though, is as close as it gets to saying one thing very loudly. And what it says is, we're being attacked! Kill everything that moves! You just set it off. And we just gave them time to get here. Shit, Sanders' man said. I turned my head to see a flood of parasites had come off of Bella, and at least some of them were galloping toward us. I looked up at Sanders, who watched them come, mouth gaping. I jumped up, grabbed Sanders, and yanked the USB key off of his neck. I turned to my friends. Run, I said. Chapter 27. We scattered as the parasites hit around us. The men who had trained their weapons on us had forgotten we existed. We weren't these scary alien creatures running at them full bore. We were just people, unarmed at that, and we weren't going to do anything to them. The men swiveled and started firing their rifles at the parasites. Turns out that Redu Tagak was right. It's hard to hit a fast-moving parasite with a tiny bullet. Two of the men went down almost immediately, yelling and fighting. The others did what we did and ran. Looking back, I saw Rob Sanders flinch, then look around. What's he looking for, I wondered. He saw me. He took off after me, pausing only to grab the shotgun Kahurangi had brought with him. Oh, right, I have his key, I thought. Then I was running again, toward Bella, running into what everyone else around me was running away from. As I ran, parasites galloped around and past me. The I'm a kaiju pheromone was still on me, and, I hoped, on my friends as well. Around me, I saw Sanders' people running, dodging, and screaming as the flood of parasites tracked them down. In my peripheral vision, I saw a parasite barrel into a human, forcing him down to the ground. Immediately, several other parasites were on him as well. I stopped paying attention to what happened to him after that. I looked up at Bella, who chose that moment to do something I didn't expect. She moved. Her body, which hadn't budged at all except to eject nuclear screams, shuddered and shook. What parasites that hadn't already come down from her were flying off her in waves, their homes disturbed by Bella's motion. Kahurangi had explained this to us earlier. Aparna and I planted the pheromone bombs where Bella takes in her air, he had said, as we'd walked toward the generator. The pheromones are going to get sucked right into her and go to every part of her body. Her parasites are going to react to it first, but eventually she'll feel it too. What then? I'd asked. Stay the hell out of her way, he'd said. I ran harder toward Bella. I felt the buckshot hit me before I heard the crack of shotgun, peppering my back and head. Sanders was too far away for the shot to do me any real damage, but it stung like hell and knocked me out of my rhythm. I stumbled and fell to the ground, giving Sanders time to close the gap between us. Give me back my k— was as far as he got before he started spitting out the clod of dirt I flung directly into his face. There was a small rock nearby. I grabbed it and pitched it at him. He cursed as it hit him in the chin, causing him to bring his hand up to his very minor injury. Really? I heard him say, in disbelief, but anything after that I missed because I was running again. As I ran, I realized I had done something to my left ankle when I'd fallen. It felt hot and sore, and every step was making it worse. I looked up and I realized that Bella was now looming directly in front of me, with nothing more between me and her. I realized something else, too. She was looking right at me. Those big, glowing, unearthly eyes had rotated across her head and were now intently peering down to where I was. I froze because I suppose that's what you do sometimes when you're prey. "I do have one more shot, Jamie," Sanders said, coming behind me. "Don't make me use it." I looked back at him. "I got news for you, Rob. You're the least of my problems right now." I pointed up. He followed my hand to see Bella staring down at the both of us. "Oh, shit," he said. I held up my arm in warning. "Don't run." "Why the fuck not?" "It won't do you any good anyway," I said. We both stared up, transfixed, at Bella, who decided that she wanted to get a closer look at the both of us. I'm not sure how to describe the geometry that was involved in how a more than 100-meter-tall creature maneuvered her head down close to our level, but it happened. Bella's head was the size of a largish suburban home, and her eyes just slid around until they found us. In and around the head, things moved. Parasites that still had not been dislodged or had been moved to attack. "Oh, fuck," Sanders said. "Stop talking," I said. Bella's eyes split, considering the both of us severally. As Bella gazed on us, I felt the heat of her internals blasting into me, forced out of her body through the network her parasites had created for her. It was almost unbearable, like standing in front of a furnace that was well on its way to overheating. There was something else, too. Something in the way Bella held herself while she was considering us. She seemed exhausted, tired, out of her element. Sad. Maybe I was reading more into it because I knew she had been taken to a place she didn't belong. It's possible my brain was ramping up a pathetic fallacy just to hope against hope that this monstrous creature with a head the size of a house wouldn't eat me up or step on me. Alternately, perhaps I was just having a psychotic break, pure and simple. Some or all of those things could have been true in the moment. It didn't change the fact that at that very second, what I most wanted to do in the world was put my hand on Bella and tell her it would be all right. "You poor girl," I whispered to her. "Are you fucking kidding me?" Sanders said behind me. He had clearly heard me. I turned to him. "Shut it, Rob," I said. "You brought this thing over here. You brought it to a place where the only thing it can do is die. You want it to die. And for what? So you can have a bio-industrial process you and your family business can monopolize. The world needs limitless bionuclear power. Dude, don't even pretend you're doing it for the world," I said. "You don't give a shit about the world, this one or hers." I pointed toward Bella. "Tom Stevens told me once that part of the job of the KPS was keeping the kaiju safe from humans. We joked about which of us were the real monsters, but it turns out it's not a joke after all, is it?" Sanders looked over nervously at Bella, who was still considering us, then back at me. "Give me the key, Jamie, and I'll send her back," he said. "I have everything I want or need from her. Give me the key, and I'll power up the portal. She can go back, you can go back, you can all go back." "What about the part where you were going to feed us to the parasites?" I asked. "I can change that part of the deal. Or the part where you just fired a shotgun at me?" "Mistakes were made." "And you would just let us go on living, knowing what we know, knowing that we would be asked about what we know, I think I can sufficiently motivate the four of you to tell a mutually beneficial story. This is where you offer us money, I said. Not just money, Sanders said, but money is a part of it. I smiled. It's tempting, I said. Until I remember that, right now, you're just making a Duke bet with yourself about whether I'm stupid enough to accept your offer. Sanders smiled back. You remembered that. I did. Did you remember I still have a shotgun? A blast of super hot air came from Bella, knocking the both of us down. Bella's head disappeared, going up, up, up into the sky. Sanders stood himself and leveled the shotgun at me. Jamie Gray, he said, let's do this. Bella screamed. A beam shot from her, and the world went golden. I looked up, and a dimensional hole had opened up behind Sanders. Fog formed around him, obscuring his view. I rolled away as he pulled the trigger, the buckshot too tightly packed to find me. As I rolled and turned, I saw something race toward my face. A parasite. My pheromones run out, I thought. It leapt over me, catching Sanders in the chest. He shouted in surprise and terror as the parasite knocked him into the hole. I lost sight of him in the fog. Somewhere, on the other side of the fog, Sanders stopped yelling and started screaming. I got up, testing the soundness of my ankle, and looked up just as Bella stopped her beam. The hole around the beam started to close up and something came through it, disrupting the fog. A helicopter. Chopper 2. Fucking Martin Satie, I said, and started waving for him, hopping as I did so. Bella spotted Chopper 2 and took a swipe at it. Satie avoided it and put distance between himself and Bella. Bella stood up, slowly, reaching her full height. She unfurled. And then she started to go in my direction. I decided I would worry about my ankle hurting later. I ran 90 degrees from the direction Bella seemed to be going. Her first steps took her out of the perimeter of the capacitors. Her second steps crushed most of the containers that Sanders' people had been using as labs. With the third steps, a noise like jet engine started coming from Bella. Bella flapped huge wings, hoping to find purchase in our planet's thin air. Eventually, they found it. Bella was airborne. I looked back down to the ground and saw three forms running toward me. Aparna, Neve, and Kahurangi. Mate, you okay? Kahurangi asked, reaching me first. My ankle's shot, but I'm fine, I said. Aparna and Neve had reached us. I showed them Sanders' USB key. We can fire up the perimeter now, I said. That's great, but there's a small problem, Neve said. Our bird has flown the coop. The longer she's out, the harder it is to send her back, Aparna said. I have an idea, I said. I turned to Aparna. How long was Bella's interval this time? A little over 20 minutes, she said. How will her flying affect the interval? She's putting in a lot of effort to fly, expending a lot of energy. It'll be a lot shorter. How much shorter? I don't know. Guess? 10 minutes at most. Neve looked up. Is that fucking Chopper 2? Satie was coming down where we were. I gave the USB key to Kahurangi. You and Neve get down to the generator and be ready. He took the key. Ready for what? He yelled, as Chopper 2 got louder around us. To send Bella back, I yelled. We're going to go get her for you. Kahurangi grinned. You're mad and I love you. He grabbed Neve, showed them the key, and motioned toward the generator. They set off. Satie hovered low enough for Aparna and me to get in. Aparna in the passenger area, and me in the co-pilot seat. I thought we agreed you were going to go back, I said to Satie once I was strapped in and my headset connected. I decided I could wait to get into trouble, Satie said. And then I noticed that when our Bella burped, she made a big hole. I wanted to see how big it was. I found out. You know what we're doing now, right? I thought you'd never ask, Satie said. I haven't asked yet. Sure you have, you just phrased it badly. Now let's go chase down our lady. Dr. Chowdhury, we have about 10 minutes, am I right? Less than that now, Aparna said. Satis swung us violently into the early morning, chasing Bella. "She's not very fast," Sati observed as we came up on her, laboring in a northwesterly direction. She was heading in the direction we thought she would, toward Goose Bay.
"The air here isn't giving her a lot of support," Aparna said. "She's compensating with her airflow systems, but they're probably faltering too. It's amazing she can fly at all."
"You're saying she could drop out of the air at any second," I said to Aparna. "It wouldn't surprise me."
"That's no good," Sati said. "She's not going to be able to walk back to where we need her. What are you going to do?"
"Let me try being polite first," Sati said.
He flew ahead of Bella and, once he had enough distance, turned and hovered in her path.
"Playing chicken is polite," Aparna said, alarmed.
"As polite as we have time for," Sati said.
Bella flew directly at Chopper 2, tacking at the very last moment to avoid it. We were buffeted by the turbulence of her wings and airflow systems. Sati evened us out and went to follow Bella, who had resumed her northwesterly direction.
"So much for being nice," he said.
"You're not going to do what I think you're going to do," I said.
"I don't know what you think I'm going to do, but yes, probably," Sati said.
I looked back at Aparna. "You're strapped in, right?"
"I thought I was, but now I'm not sure," Aparna said.
I nodded. "That's the right attitude." I looked over to Sati.
"All right, do it."
In the glow of the instruments, I could see Sati grin. He made Chopper 2 climb in altitude and then started a rapid descent toward Bella's head.
"Oh, I do not like this. I do not like this at all," Aparna declared.
"Yep," I agreed. I was trying very hard not to wet myself. Chopper 2 came in hard on Bella's head, scraping the landing skids across it. At one point, it felt like one of the skids caught and that we would pitch forward and die, but then whatever the skid was caught on let go. Bella screamed at that.
"That got her attention," I said.
"Not enough," Sati said, and dropped Chopper 2 directly in front of Bella's face, so the tail rotor was inches away from making contact. From the screaming, I could tell this was enraging Bella. I looked up at the monitor to see the rear view.
"Teeth," I said urgently.
"On it," Sati said, and we dived suddenly and in a very unsafe manner. Bella followed, determined to make us pay for annoying her.
"She's not flying slow anymore," I said, as I watched her gain on us with what I hoped was not complete panic in my voice.
"How much more time, Dr. Chowdhury?" Sati asked.
"She's ready," Aparna said. "I'd be guessing any minute now."
The faint lights of the wreck site were visible now.
"Your friends had better be ready," Sati said to me.
"They'll be ready," I promised. "Let's hope we can time this thing."
Folks, Aparna said, "look at the monitor."
I looked. Bella was gaining on us, mouth open, screaming. From inside of her, there was an emerging glow.
"I think we're out of time," I said.
"Almost there," Sati said.
"Almost isn't going to work right now," I assured him.
We cleared the trees to the site as Bella screamed and released her blast, which shot over the top of Chopper 2. Sati dived and flew what felt like inches above the ground. Around us, the world turned golden. Behind us, the world was dark in the monitor as Bella's blast tore up the ground, flinging earth and soil into the sky.
"Hang on," Sati said.
He jerked us up just enough for Bella's breath to skip over the capacitor perimeter. A wide, brilliant wall of light flew aside Chopper 2. It was beautiful, and close enough that I could almost reach out and touch it. It would kill me if I did so. We passed the other side of the perimeter, and the beam shut off. In front of us, large trees were coming up impossibly fast. Aparna and I screamed. Sati pulled up just in time, and then hovered over the treetops. He turned Chopper 2 around. Bella and her eggs were gone. And not just gone. It was like they had never been there at all. I stared at the place where Bella wasn't.
"It worked," I said.
"We did it."
"Look," Aparna said, pointing.
Kahurangi and Neve were running toward the perimeter, awkwardly, packs in tow.
"Nice shooting," I said to them, once they were in Chopper 2, strapped and with headsets on.
"You didn't tell us you were coming in right over the damn treetops," Neve said. "I barely had time to signal Kahurangi. We almost missed it."
"Yeah, but you didn't."
"How did you get her to follow you?"
Kahurangi asked. We enraged her, Aparna said. Kahurangi nodded. That sounds about right.
Let's hope Kaiju don't have good memories, Sati said. Otherwise, life is going to be very uncomfortable for Chopper 2 when we get back.
Do you think she's safe? I asked Aparna. Bella, I mean, there wasn't a lot of time between her intervals.
I don't know, Aparna said.
I think so, but I don't know. What I do know is that she has a chance now that she's back where she belongs. She didn't have one here.
We did our job, Kahurangi said. We preserved the Kaiju.
Maybe, Aparna amended.
I think maybe counts this time.
What happened to that asshole Sanders? Neve asked me.
The same thing that happened to everyone else here, I said. Just on the other side of the barrier.
We landed at Canadian Forces Base Goose Bay at 5 a.m., and with Chopper 2 flying on literal fumes. Because we were entirely unscheduled, and appeared, as if from nowhere, with no itinerary, we were welcomed by an impressive array of Canadian military.
That's nice, Neve said, eyeing the layout of military. How are Canadian military prisons? Asking for a friend.
You're not going to prison, Sati said.
What are we going to tell them? Aparna asked.
Sati looked back at her.
You aren't going to tell them anything. None of you are. You're going to leave this to me.
Happy to, Kahurangi said.
But why are they going to listen to you?
Because of who I am, Sati said.
It matters to them that you're a pilot?
He also has a doctorate, I said.
They won't care that I'm either of those, Sati said.
They will care that I'm a colonel in the Royal Canadian Air Force.
Which means what to them? I asked.
Among other things, it means I outrank the base commander here.
Look at you, Neve said admiringly. Slumming all this time.
Not slumming, Sati said.
Official Canadian liaison to the KPS. You can ask McDonald and Denso when you get back.
So why do you fly Chopper 2? I asked.
I fly Chopper 2 because being a liaison is boring, Sati said. This is much more fun. Now, you all stay in here and shut up. Let me do my thing.
He got out of the chopper and went to talk to the soldier in charge. He reached into his pocket and pulled out his wallet, took out a card. He showed it to the soldier. The soldier saluted Sati. So did the rest of them.
Chapter 28. We did not have to go to Canadian military prison, or any prison for that matter. We didn't go back to Tanaka Base right away, either. First, because we couldn't. The gateway at Honda Base was still down and would be down for the full length of time. Sati, Colonel Sati, I should say, had relayed the information to the crew of the Shobijin, who forwarded it back to the base, albeit waiting for him to go through the barrier in Chopper 2 before they did so. As soon as he made it through, the Shobijin hightailed it out of the area. This was a good thing, because once Bella came back through, she set fire to most of the surrounding jungle. For a week, it was unclear whether she would be able to restore her internal function and her complement of parasites. Then, she settled back in, splashed out a final clutch of eggs, and brooded for several more weeks. She survived. We had, indeed, preserved her. The second reason we didn't go back right away was because KPS had to investigate the incident, and we were the star witnesses. After we left CFB Goose Bay, we spent 2 weeks in a St. John's hotel, having Zoom meetings with KPS higher-ups and various other stakeholders, explaining what Rob Sanders had done and why, and how it related to Tensorial, his family's company, and its predecessors. We were backed up on this by Dave Berg, a.k.a. Dave Barely Above an Intern, who survived thanks largely to being unconscious and sprayed with kaiju pheromones. All things considered, he forgave Neve for the zapping. The new information about the destruction of the first Tanaka base, it turned out, had not come as a complete surprise to the folks at KPS. There had always been a suspicion that the Sanders family had not been entirely forthcoming. The information, however, appeared to come as a surprise to the representative from the U.S. Department of Energy. It's possible the representative had other things on his mind. The United States election had happened, without a rogue nuclear explosion to derail it,
and this fellow would likely be out of a job in a couple of months. He seemed willing to let KPS handle it however they liked. KPS handled it by doing what it does, by having the event not officially exist. The mission to bring Bella over stuck with its official cover story of being a group of scientists trying a new method of radio interferometry, which went horribly wrong and exploded, as radio interferometry projects sometimes do.
They do not, Neve had protested, as they were an astrophysicist, but they were overruled.
As for the tech billionaire, Rob Sanders, who had founded the project out of his passion for science and knowledge, it was assumed he was killed in the explosion and his body predated before it could be retrieved, possibly by Labrador wolves.
Labrador wolves? Kahurangi asked.
Are those a real thing? Oh yes, Aparna had assured him. While Tensorial could not officially be held accountable for Sanders' activities or the activities of the company involving KPS over the years, at the turn of the U.S. government in January, the Department of Justice announced that Tensorial and its past and current CEOs, all members of the Sanders family, were being investigated for a decades-long pattern of fraud involving the Departments of Energy and Defense, among others. It would be a long and uncomfortable process for the company. Which, well, good. While we were away, Tanaka Base held its memorials for those it had lost from Sanders' taking of Bella. The official cover story given to family and survivors was close enough to the truth. While doing research on the animals they were tasked with protecting, they were ambushed by poachers and killed. KPS's survivor benefits were always generous, and its grief at the loss sincere. We learned that everyone at Tanaka Base held their breaths until they learned whether Aparna, Kahurangi, Neve, Martin Sati, and I had survived. When they learned we had, they collectively celebrated and swore to murder us for making them worry. They did not murder us when we returned. Instead, they declared a holiday, one whole day of partying and feasting and drinking and karaoke. Then we went back to work. Aparna to the bio lab, Kahurangi to the chem lab, Neve to physics, and Sati to, well, in the short term, to doing not a whole lot, because getting a whole helicopter back to Kaiju Earth was an actual project, but then back to flying. I went back to lifting things. McDonald had offered me Tom's job on a temporary basis, with an eye toward making it permanent. I passed. I didn't feel right slipping into his place, and also I had already forced Val to do a two-person job by herself for several weeks. And anyway, I liked my job. Lifting things was surprisingly good for my brain. So I kept doing it, without undue drama, for the rest of the tour. Which, frankly, felt odd. After such a dramatic start to our tour, everything else after we came back to Tanaka Base felt like an anticlimax. "I keep waiting for the other shoe to drop," Neve said, and we all agreed with them. But the shoe stayed up. Until the day, in March, when we stood in Aloha shirts, drinks in hand, to welcome Blue Team back to Tanaka Base and for them to see us off. As was custom, I left a welcoming gift for whichever member of Blue Team was taking over my room and a note. "Dear whomever, if it's your first time here, welcome. If it's more than your first time here, welcome back. When I arrived, 6 months and forever ago, I was given a gift of a plant. I am giving you the same gift. It's larger than when I got it, and has been repotted. You may need to repot it again before you gift it onward. This plant was given to me by someone who was leaving this world behind for good. She said that it was time for her to go back to the real world. I understand what she meant. This world is so strange, but I think it's just as real as the other one. This plant is real. The people here are real. The bonds and friendships we make here are real too. It's unreal how real this world is and can be. This plant is yours, but I will be back. And when I come back, I hope I get to meet you and have a meal with you and sing karaoke with you and talk about plants and perhaps become friends. I can't wait to meet you. Until then, be kind to our plant. Janie Gray. Aparna, Kahurangi, Neve, and I said goodbye at BMI, which was not quite as deserted as it had been when we left. Vaccines had started to roll out, and people, maybe too optimistically, had started to travel again. Aparna was heading to Los Angeles and to family there. Kahurangi was heading to New Zealand, and Neve to Ireland, where both faced a couple of weeks of isolation before seeing friends and family. I'm looking forward to that, Neve had said. 2 weeks of sleeping, eating room service, and screaming at the news. We all hugged and promised to stay in contact through the KPS Gold Team Discord channel. The last KPS person I saw, before I headed off, was Bryn McDonald, who waved to me and told me to keep a lookout for a new assistant for her. We can't replace Tom, she said, but I still need someone to do that job. I promised I would. Then I was back home, in my terrible East Village apartment, which actually wasn't as terrible as I remembered it, with Brent and Laertes. We missed you, Brent said. I liked the quiet, Laertes yelled from the other room where he was playing a video game. Have you even moved from that room since I've been gone? I yelled back. It's called quarantine, Jamie. Maybe you should look into it. He has left the room, Brent assured me. I poop occasionally, Laertes said. I've missed this, I said sincerely. Brent grinned. Well, good, he said. We've ordered Thai, and it'll be here soon. And in the meantime, I can catch you up on the last 6 months. Do I really want to know? I asked. Brent moved his hand in a seesaw fashion. There was a knock at the door. That was quick, Brent said, and started to get up. I motioned him back down. I'll get it, I said. I have money for a cash tip. Lord our poverty over us, money bags, Laertes yelled. I love you too, I said, put my mask back on, and went to answer the door. Pad Thai, Tom Kha Gai soup, and oh my God, it's Jamie Gray, said the delivery person at the door. I looked more closely. Kanisha Williams, I said. Oh my God, Jamie, Kanisha said. She set down the food and reached out a hand to me, then remembered that it was still infectious times and drew back. I'm so sorry. Last March, when you were fired, I didn't tell you. I should have warned you, but I didn't. I was afraid. I'm so sorry. It's all right, I said. I know what happened. About what Rob Sanders did, that $1 bet he made you take. He made me pay him that dollar, too, Kanisha said. Can you believe it? I can, I assured her. Did you hear about Rob? I did. They think he was eaten by wolves, Kanisha said. How weird is that? It could have been weirder, I suggested. I don't know how. How are you doing anyway, Kanisha? I asked. Well, you know, she motioned up and down. This is how I'm doing. After Rob sold Food Mood, the new owners laid everyone off. They didn't want the company or the people. They just wanted the user list. And then it was a pandemic, and then there were no jobs, and this was what there was. I get it, I said. I've been there. Kanisha smiled, but then looked miserable. I don't know. Maybe this is karmic justice, right? I was so scared of losing my job that I let Rob do something shitty to you and those other people. And then I lost my job anyway, and here I am. She waved down at her food, delivering your pad thai. It's not karmic justice, I said. It's just bad people and bad luck. It could have happened to anyone. Yes, well, this time it happened to me. Kanisha smiled again. Anyway, nice to see you, Jamie. She turned to go. Hold on, I said, reaching for my wallet. Oh, no tip, Kanisha said. I couldn't take a tip. Not from you. Not after what I did. It's not a tip, I said, and handed her a business card. She took it and looked at it doubtfully. What is this? The organization I work for has a job opening, I said. I think you'd be perfect for it. Author's note and acknowledgments. I started 2020 with the plan to write a novel beginning in March, after I returned from a vacation with friends. This novel, the one you're listening to now, was written in February and March of 2021. So what happened to that novel I was going to write in March 2020? Well, perhaps not surprisingly, 2020 happened to it. I probably don't have to remind you how 2020 was, but in case you've blocked it entirely, pandemic, and protests, and fires, and elections, and venality, and isolation, and awfulness, all the way through. Plus, in November and December, I was sick with something that I was sure was COVID, but all the tests told me it wasn't. Whatever it was, it turned my brain into pudding, and I literally couldn't think a thought more complex than, "I like cheese," for about a month. Through all of this, I was supposed to be writing that novel, a novel which was meant to be dark, heavy, complex, and broodingly ambitious. In other words, not the perfect novel to be writing when the world is falling apart around you. I did write in that novel, nevertheless. Tens of thousands of words that made sense on the sentence and paragraph level, but didn't do particularly well as chapters, and certainly not as an overarching story. It was a novel that demanded focus. And focus, it turns out, was hard for me in 2020. But then 2021 happened. New year, new start, fresh ambition. After my illness at the end of the year, my head finally felt clear enough to connect things together again. I started writing again on January 4th, did a few hundred words to rev up, did a few more on January 5th. And then January 6th happened. And, well, insurrections really are focus pullers. I didn't know that before. I didn't have to know that before, but I know it now. That was January done, in terms of being able to write. Finally, 2 weeks after the inauguration of a new president, and with the old one safely shoved into Florida to yell at clouds, I tried again. I wrote 3,400 words in a day. Good words. Words that actually made sense as sentences and as part of a larger, overarching novel structure. It felt good. I felt good. I was on my way with this book. I closed up my work and was eager to start again the next day. The next day, I came back to my computer and couldn't find the pages I'd written the day before. For the first time in years, my computer ate my work. In a world of auto-saving word processors and documents automatically sent to the cloud, I thought it was basically impossible to lose a file, especially one that I manually saved fucking twice before I closed out the document. But here I was. And 3,400 words, good words, words I liked, were just gone. And it was at that moment that I had what you might call an epiphany. I was done writing that novel. It wasn't those 3,400 words per se. I could replace those words in a day and move on. It was everything else about this particular novel, and my struggle to write it in what was, on a global scale, the worst year I'd ever encountered in my life. It was the wrong novel, in the wrong year. And at that point, I hated it. And also, I hated how it had been making me feel for a better part of a year, as I tried to piece it together in a world where everything was flying apart, and I felt I had to be witness to all of it. I needed to stop writing that novel. Which was a problem, because that novel was under contract and was due, right now. And also a problem because over the years I had developed a reputation for being pretty reliable. If you gave me a deadline, I would hit it. I might turn the manuscript in at 7 a.m. on the last possible morning it could get in order for production to get it out in time, but it would still be there. This time, I wasn't just missing the deadline. I was blowing it up entirely. The book I was writing was on the schedule. Cover art was already being mocked up. Marketing was already making a plan for it. And here I was saying, nope, done, bye. This was, shall we say, a moment of professional existential crisis. Who was I as an author if I was not reliable? At that point, I had two thoughts. The first was the concept of the sunk cost fallacy, in which people keep doing things even when they should stop because they've already invested so much time and effort in it and they don't want that time and effort, quote, to go to waste. The second was a quote by video game designer Shigeru Miyamoto in reference to games, but applicable in many fields, including writing. A delayed game is eventually good. A bad game is bad forever. Meaning to me that sometimes it's better to stop and reassess and correct than it is to just keep plugging ahead out of fear and deadlines. Reliable is not an excuse for bad. So, I sent my editor, Patrick Nielsen Hayden, an email explaining why I couldn't write that novel anymore. It was probably the most difficult professional email I've sent, to date anyway. It's up to Patrick to tell his side of that email exchange, but I can say he was sympathetic and understanding. 2020 was a year, y'all. That novel was taken off the schedule, and we would figure out where we would go from there. Just like that, I didn't have to do that novel anymore. All the mental energy and angst that was tied up in it over the course of the better part of a year was suddenly and finally swept off the table. I felt relief. And I felt happy. That's when my brain said, oh, hey, we're not thinking about that old thing anymore, because I have this other thing that I was playing with when you weren't looking, and here is the whole thing. Okay, thanks, bye. Then the entire plot and concept of the Kaiju Preservation Society dropped into my head all at once. And thus, literally one day after I sent my editor an email that basically said, I can't write this novel, I am full of angst and pain, what even is my career anymore? I sent him another email that was, oh, hey, never mind, I have this new idea, it's really cool, and you'll have it in March. Writers. I mean, seriously. As a writer, I feel grateful to this novel, because writing it was restorative. KPS is not, and I say this with absolutely no slight intended, a brooding symphony of a novel. It's a pop song. It's meant to be light and catchy, with 3 minutes of hooks and choruses for you to sing along with, and then you're done, and you go on with your day, hopefully with a smile on your face. I had fun writing this, and I needed to have fun writing this. We all need a pop song from time to time, particularly after a stretch of darkness. What about that other novel, you ask? Will you ever come back to it? You know what? I might. The idea of it is good, and in the future, if my brain is in the right place and the world is in the right place, I might come back to it. It deserved my full attention, which I wasn't able to give. When I can give it that, I may try again. I'll let you know. In the meantime, you have this novel. The right novel at the right time for me. It reminded me that I like writing novels and sharing them with you all. For that alone, I'm glad it exists and that it's in your hands. With that as a preamble, it's time for acknowledgments. First and most obviously, thank you to Patrick, my editor, literally without whom this book would not exist. A good editor doesn't merely look at words. He looks at the author as well. I appreciate that Patrick sees me and gets me and encouraged me in ways I needed to be encouraged in order to get myself back on track. Thanks to the entire team at Tor who helped with this book, Molly McGee, Rachel Bass, copy editors Sarah and Chris with Script Acuity Studio, Peter Lutchen, Heather Saunders, and Jeff LaSala. I want to give an extra shout-out to Alexis Sarela, my publicist at Tor, not for this book, although I'm sure she'll do great with it, But because the last tour book of mine, The Last Emperor, came out just as COVID was getting into full swing, and all my tour dates were canceled because the entire world shut down. In the space of what felt like days, Alexis and the rest of the PR folks at Tor retooled the entire tour to be online and virtual. It was a huge effort, and it worked. The audiences for the events were great, and the book became a bestseller. I want to be sure she and all the people in Tor's PR department know that I appreciate the work they did for me and for all of Tor's other authors in a really difficult time. Also, thanks to Steve Feldberg and his team at Audible for the work they do on the audio versions of my books. In the UK, much respect and thanks to Bella Pagan and Georgia Summers and the whole team at Tor UK. And of course, thanks to my agents, Ethan Ellenberg, B.B. Lewis, and Ezra Ellenberg, who sell me in the U.S. and overseas. Thanks also to Matthew Sugarman and Joel Gottler for their work on the film TV side of things. During 2020, I found it difficult to write for reasons I've already noted above, and in December I thought maybe if I came at creative things sideways I might restart my engines. So I wrote out an idea for a holiday-themed song called Another Christmas, and called on my friend, musician Matthew Ryan, to see if he might be interested in collaborating with me on it. He was. The resulting song was a real mood lifter for me in a dark season, and reminded me that, indeed, I could still make things. I thank him, and will cherish our song always. And as always, thank you to my family. My daughter Athena, who is becoming a fantastic writer in her own right, and my wife, Christine. Chrissy had to watch me struggle through trying to write that earlier novel in 2020, and I know it was difficult for her to see me not quite make it work, because she was concerned for me, and because she knows that this is usually a thing I can do well. It's never great to see your spouse struggle with their work. But through it all, she was terrific and supportive, because she's a great spouse, and also pretty much the best person I know. And when I chucked the other novel over the side and started writing KPS, she was cheering me along and reading the chapters as I went and always asking for the next one, which I was always happy to give her. I've said before that she is the reason you have books from me at all. It's even more the case with this one. I really do owe everything to her. One more. Thank you. I'm happy you're reading me. Finally, here's a fun fact. I finished writing this book on the day the events in the book come to a close. I didn't plan that, but it's cool that it happened. John Scalzi, March 20th, 2021.
This has been an Audible Studios production of the Kaiju Preservation Society. Written by John Scalzi. Performed by Will Wheaton. Executive producers, Catherine Stewart and Mike Charzik. Producer, Sarah Cosa Paglusa. Edited, mixed, and mastered by Brian Corcoran. Copyright 2022 by John Scalzi. Sound recording copyright 2022 by Audible Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.